In the summer of 1683, the Ottoman Turks laid siege to Vienna and were repelled and defeated by an alliance of Christian European states. Historian Bernard Lewis marks that calamitous defeat as a turning point for Islam. An empire that had been wealthier and more powerful than the West, more creative, more fair to its minorities and its poor, the Islamic world began to sink militarily, politically, economically. Lewis explores that decline in a new book called What Went Wrong. To illustrate the turnabout between East and West, he cites the example of a cup of coffee with sugar.
Coffee came originally from Ethiopia. It was brought to the Middle East. It became very popular in the Middle East. And the West first imported it from the Middle East. Sugar came from Iran, possibly ultimately from India. That too became well known in the Middle East long before it was known in Europe. So that coffee and sugar were two important items among Middle Eastern exports to the Western world. Then things changed around. The Europeans learned how to grow both sugar and coffee in their plantations, and to do so more efficiently and therefore more cheaply than in the Middle East. So that by the 18th century, if a Turk or an Arab indulged in that familiar delight, a cup of sweet coffee, the probability was that the coffee came from Java or South America and the sugar from the West Indies. Only the hot water was local. And in the 19th century, even that ceased to be true as European companies took over most of the public utilities.
There's an implication there that some capacity for innovation, and you write about it in terms of science, some capacity for innovation simply wasn't there in that part of the world.
It had been there, but it was lost or even suppressed. The Islamic society of the Middle East had been in its prime, undoubtedly, the most advanced, the most creative, the most inventive, on all the frontiers of knowledge in every significant field of human endeavor. They had led in science, in technology, in commerce, in astronomy, chemistry, physics, you name it. And then suddenly they just stopped and began to fall more and more behind the previously barbarous West.
Well, when you try to examine how it was that this spiritually based, scientifically advanced at one time civilization fell behind what had been their barbarous rival in Europe, one great difference that you focus on, and that obviously made a huge impression on the Muslims as they first encountered the West, was the status of women.
They look at it with horror.
Yes, they thought it was a sign of all that was wrong.
Yes, they see it as a sign of weakness, of decay, and so on. For a long time, when they looked for the causes of Western progress, they looked to the military, then to the economic, then to the political, then to the scientific. But then, as far as I'm aware, for the first time, a Turkish writer in 1868 wrote an article in which he suggested something entirely new. He said that the cause of our backwardness is that we deprive ourselves of the talents and services of half the population and entrust the education of the other half to ignorant and downtrodden mothers. He uses a couple of very striking metaphors. He says, at best, we treat our women as jewels or musical instruments. And he ends by saying, the result is that our society is like a human body that is paralyzed on one side. Now, this has not been widely accepted. The most noteworthy exponent of this view was Kemal Atatürk, the first president of the Turkish Republic. In the 1920s, one of his first campaigns was for women's rights. Mm-hmm. Anything less likely than an Ottoman Pasha and a general campaigning for feminism would be difficult to imagine.
And a general who had been a true war hero on behalf
indeed,
of the Turks
yes.
in the First World War.
And also something of a philanderer. Nevertheless, he went around campaigning for equal rights for women, political rights especially, and he put it with military terseness. He said, our task now is to catch up with the modern world. We will not catch up with the modern world if we only modernize half the population.
Well, I mean, could that be the big idea? Not that things are inevitably all explained by one big idea, but is it possible that the marginalization of half of one's population through discrimination against women Could that have been what inhibited Islam from advancing, or were women really that far advanced in the West in the 18th century?
Well, I wouldn't say it's the sole cause, but I think it is a very important cause, and one which has not been given adequate attention.
At one point, you draw a distinction between patterns of corruption in the East patterns of corruption in the West.
Yes, I think that's important. Corruption is a bad thing anywhere, but it seems to me that there is a very important difference between our corruption and their corruption. In our corruption, meaning in the Western world, Western democracies in particular, you make money in the marketplace, and then you use that money to buy power, or at least to buy access or influence. In their societies, particularly as they have developed in modern times, you seize power, and then you use the power to make money. And morally, I can't see any difference between them, but from the political and the economic point of view, I think our kind of corruption does less damage.
For the past few months, well, since September 11th, this has been what perhaps before that was a question that that occupied only a small number of the population, is now a very common one. What's wrong in that part of the world? Why does it seem to be stuck? Why is Islam still dealing with religion and politics in a way that seems at best archaic and obsolete to us?
Well, this is the key question. This is the question which they have been asking themselves for something like 300 years now. Mm-hmm. And the debate has been going on ever since, and many different explanations have been offered. They have certainly become aware that things have gone badly wrong. Now, when you are aware that things are going badly wrong, there are two questions you can ask. You can ask, what did we do wrong? In which case you proceed to the next question, how do we put it right? Or you can ask, who did this to us? And that leads you off into the twilight world of conspiracy theories and neuroses and so on.
Well, we hear quite a bit of that now.
Oh, yes. It's also known as the blame game.
Yes. I mean, is there actually still a vigorous discussion going on in, say, Egypt or Pakistan, for that matter, about what's wrong? What should we do?
One of the difficulties now is that there are very few states in the Muslim Middle East or elsewhere where free discussion is possible. It happens in Turkey, and it happens to a very large extent among emigres. Arabic newspapers published in London, for example, are much more interesting than Arabic newspapers published in the Arab world. And they do circulate in the Arab world quite extensively. So the debate is going on, but it's not by any means a free and open debate.
Well, Bernard Lewis, thank you very much for talking with us today. Historian Bernard Lewis is the author most recently of the book What Went Wrong? Western Impact and Middle Eastern Response. There is more on the subject and on the author at our website, npr.org.